Good afternoon. I want to welcome everyone to the Second Court of Appeals this afternoon. We have one case that we're submitting with oral argument and several other cases that we'll decide this afternoon without oral argument. Before we begin, I'd like to introduce our panel. To my left is Justice Mark Pittman, and to my right is Justice Lee Gabriel, and I'm Chief Justice Bonnie Sedderth. Before we begin to hear the arguments, will you please call the case?
The court will now call Norman Delamar Bergey,
the Board of
the Bankers Association, to support. Mr. Thomas M. Michelle will argue for the appellant. Mr. Amos B. Pettis will argue for the appellant.
You may begin.
Thank you, and may it please the court. Nice to see you all this afternoon. Kind of an interesting case with some interesting procedural positions of where the case was presented. I know the court is well familiar with this. Resulted in an accident during mountain biking on the path of the Fort Worth Mountain Bikers Association. The defendants in this case, as we know, filed a motion for summary judgment. They primarily pursued their motion for summary judgment under the recreational use statute. When that was responded to, an issue came up as to whether or not that statute even applied. And then if not, what is the secondary question of whether ordinary negligence applies or whether premises liability applies? So I think that's the question faced before the court. And it was a question I know the trial court grappled with as well, requesting additional briefing and kind of went back and forth. And a secondary issue is the trial court sustained a hearsay objection to the plaintiff's expert affidavit, which I'll get to at the end if I have time. But we all know, by definition, an expert is going to be testifying to their opinions, which would constitute hearsay. They never have firsthand personal knowledge. But the first question I think before the court is whether Section Chapter 75 applies to this case. The trial court struggled, and we can't tell from the record below whether or not the trial court accepted that argument or not. But the facts in this case, as set forth, is there the defendant in this case was an independent contractor with the city of Fort Worth, in which many of the rights and duties were not given over to the association, but were in fact retained by the city, and there's no ownership and no possession, and certainly not a lessee. So, under the three standards, in order for the recreational use standard to apply, is they've got to be an owner, which I think it's undisputed before the court they're not an owner. The association is not an owner. It's undisputed they're not a lessee. So we're down to the last question, is whether they are an occupier. I think this case is fairly clear that the, at least our position, is that the recreational use statute does not apply. They don't fall into any of those categories. We do have some things that help us with a lot of different type of cases is we've got an extensive contractual agreement that specifies the rights and duties of the parties. And clearly, first and foremost, they set forth that the association is an independent contractor, that the city retains all rights to control and management and to enforce the necessary and proper rules. Any ownership or modification or improvements would be made, will be owned by the city. What they were, the association was really a, what the contract expressly states, an independent contractor to maintain and rebuild the trails and to monitor them. The only case the defendants can cite in response to that is trying to, I think, put a square peg in a round hole, is citing the Murillo case, which was an easement case, and also against Encore, in which Encore retained exclusive control, as you can imagine. They're a quasi-governmental entity with regulatory rights, that they would retain right and control over these transformers. So the way and there was a vigorous dissent and was en banc, but the way they phrased it was, can an easement holder who controls or occupies the easement may be liable as an occupier of the property? And I think Murillo is really a fact-specific case, which is distinguishable from our case. Number one, it was a conveyance of an easement. Two, it was utility transformers, obviously inherently dangerous, and they controlled and retained all rights and duties with regard to those transformers. In converse, we have a non-occupying independent contract that they will just come in and monitor and do those. So it's our position, and I can't tell how Judge Wallach felt about it, but got the impression he wasn't so sure that the Chapter 75 applied. That if we get past that test, we go back to whether ordinary negligence applies or premises applies, premises liability standards. And as we cited in our briefs, this is sometimes a tough call, too. The courts have gone back and forth which one it is, whether it's premises or whether it's ordinary negligence. In this case, they did not move for summary judgment under our theory of ordinary negligence. So if the court finds that ordinary negligence is the standard, they would require a reversal and remand. I think the principal question here is we believe that ordinary negligence is the standard applied. Once again, quite frankly, that's where a lot of the discussion went with Judge Wallach, and that's where the supplemental briefing came in, is he wanted to know whether he thought this was a premises case or an ordinary negligence case standard. We thought it was an ordinary negligence standard, once again.
So what was the duty?
Ordinary negligence of care that a reasonable maintenance contractor would apply in the same or similar circumstances. We had submitted our expert affidavit that the trees, since they're monitoring trails, and these are bike riders that come along there, knowing that they're going to be focusing on their bikes, that a reasonable maintenance would keep those paths clear.
So basically it's to warn or make safe.
Yes, warn, maintain as well.
Well, that's premises. Those are the premises liability duties.
No,
to warn or to reasonably make safe.
But not from a maintenance standpoint. This is a maintenance contract, basically. And that's where Judge Wallach was coming from with saying, well, wait a minute. They're not the owner, they're not the occupier, but they're contracted to maintain the property. And we cited the cases, the Supreme Court case, the difference is like from...
So if someone trips on my lawn, they can blame it on the guy that comes out and mows my grass rather than me?
Depending on...
And if they go after the guy who mows my grass, then he's held to an ordinary standard, and if they sue me, it's a premises?
Correct.
You think that makes sense?
Yeah, I do. I'll tell you why. And the Supreme Court in our brief, we've cited the distinction. The Supreme Court did the reverse about if an employee is injured on the job, on the premises, there's this conflict. Well, you've got two independent conceptual thoughts here going on, right? You have this premises liability thought. Well, he's injured on the premises using a condition and use of the property. Or do you get employer negligence standards? And the Supreme Court saying that, well, we're going to have two different standards. We're not going to apply premises liability in the worker context. Same analysis here. If you've got negligence, if he's mowing the yard, and he does, and he's mowing the yard, and the blade flies off because he didn't maintain it while operating on the property, that would not be a premises liability case. Each case is really...
No, but if it carves out a big divot in my lawn by doing it,
right,
and somebody comes and walks on the lawn and falls because of the divot,
right,
then it's an ordinary negligence, not a premises condition?
That could be a... And I know we're getting a little dangerous here by coming up with hypotheticals because I think...
Okay, well, let's just talk about a tree.
They are
you know, there's a tree that falls.
Correct.
Okay. He didn't propel it out. He didn't... The association didn't take the branch and toss it and hit somebody with it. The branch fell.
Correct.
And it became a condition that was dangerous, according to your theory, and caused injury.
The theory is they failed to... Two things that make this very different than a lot of these other cases and the hypotheticals is the contractual agreement between the parties. Okay? We know... A little bit of a long answer, but I got to get to the first part, which is when you get to the general contractor, when you look to who's liable, right? And we all know a lot of those times, those general contractor contracts are very specific in saying the general contractor has the exclusive right and control, right? They contractually negotiate who's going to have that liability. And so that relieves a little bit of this analysis we have to do because they've contractually delegated those responsibilities. We know those are enforceable. Likewise here, in this case, this contract reads like a regular maintenance contract that you're supposed to do. That is, to me, strictly ordinary negligence, not a premises case. However, if this was not in place and it was the city who had retained the right to service, it could be a conditional use. The examples you come up with, I think leaving the lawnmower, leaving the equipment there, there are cases where they've left, contractors have left, you know, pipes on the premises, and that was a negligence claim. It's not a premises claim. And so you look at, to me, the fundamental act of what act are they performing. In this case, contractually, they are performing a maintenance contract. That is negligence, not premises. And Chief Justice Sutter, I agree. These are sometimes case-by-case analysis. And the courts, even the Supreme Court, has said they're struggling with where that line drawing is. So in this case, to me, if you read the contract, and we've set it out on our brief on page 2 and 3, they specifically say they're independent contractors. Everybody agrees they don't occupy, or non-possessory people. And the duties here are trail maintenance, inspecting, things like that. All things that sound in negligence type of duties. And that's the battle, I think, that it's the primary question before this court, is whether this is ordinary negligence standard or whether this is premises liability. I agree with you, Your Honor. That's to me the question. I think it's one thing that makes it an interesting case. I think what also makes it interesting is the extensive nature of the contractual shifting of who's responsible for what, which takes us out of a lot of the times where you probably don't have a written contract in your lawn mowing case that is this explicit and this detailed about allocating rights and duties. So in part, we're looking to look to the contract of the parties that's binding on the parties and hasn't been challenged. Side issue, if the court were to go down the premises liability trail, they raised for the first time in their reply to our response in the motion for summary judgment that they failed to raise a fact issue as to whether or not they were a licensee or not. We've objected to that in the trial court. We objected it in our brief to this court that it was raised for the first time in their reply brief. So that would be too late to raise for the first time. If the court agrees that ordinary negligence is the standard, I think that's the case. They didn't move for summary judgment on that standard. And so there was no duty. The no evidence portion was only as to the premises liability portion. The bulk of the traditional motion was under the recreational use. So,
in the no evidence motion, didn't they challenge the existence of a duty?
They did, but they made it. They expressly stated under their no evidence as no evidence under the premises liability standards.
But isn't what the duty is a matter of law?
It could be, yes, but I think it's also fair notice that they're going down that there's no evidence of a premises liability claim. And then in the reply, they come back and say there's no evidence that you are a licensee, which they did not assert in their traditional motion. They could have stopped. They could have passed their hearing a motion for summary judgment and teed it up correctly. Very simple procedural mechanism that is not uncommonly used if a person, a defendant or a plaintiff, comes in forth and raises an issue that you hadn't raised. And no offense, I think their primary approach was that this was a recreational use statute. I think when they saw our response that it was not a recreational use, they kind of revamped and brought in these licensee standard for the first time. And their no evidence motion was strictly a premises liability. Did not move for summary judgment on ordinary negligence. Different standards. With regard to the expert affidavit, I'm going to briefly, I know I'm running out of time here. The sole objection was a generic hearsay objection, which was sustained by the trial court. We think it's defective for a couple reasons. Number one, it didn't state what parts were hearsay. Number two, by definition, when you look at the rules of evidence and you look at what an expert is retained to do, they didn't challenge the qualifications, they didn't challenge the opinions, they challenged it strictly that it's hearsay. If that line of reasoning is followed, any expert opinion would be hearsay. There was a They don't cite any support for it, but the very last, they only respond to the affidavit in defense of the striking of it in the last page of their brief. And they say, well, the report was attached to the affidavit, and it wasn't actually technically part of the affidavit. They cite no support for that. He incorporated and said it was his true and correct copy of his opinions that are set forth. That's what the nature of opinions are. They're opinions. So we think the hearsay objection, we've cited case law on that, is defective as a matter of law. You can't just say hearsay. You've got to specify. And number two, by definition, an expert, when they're rendering an opinion, is going to be hearsay. So if we do get remanded back, maybe they'll challenge the qualifications or the opinions, but they didn't do that this time. So we're asking for a reversal and sending us back to the trial court. Thank you.
Go ahead.
May it please the court, my name is Amos Pettis and I represent the Appalee, the Fort Worth Mountain Bikers Association, and we're asking this court to affirm the judgment of the trial court. The Fort Worth Mountain Bikers Association signed an Adopt-a-Park agreement with the City of Fort Worth, wherein the association volunteered to install and maintain mountain bike trails in Gateway Park, which is a large wooded city park. The association was not paid for this work, but did it to help improve our city and provide mountain bike trails for the people who live here. Volunteers from the association met monthly to ride or walk those trails and correct any problems that they saw. And Mr. Delamar was riding one of these trails when he hit a fallen tree. I'd like to address one characterization of this, that the association as an independent contractor and this being a maintenance contract. Hearing the argument, I was envisioning a janitor's contract as an independent contractor out there just cleaning it up. This was an agreement to install and then maintain the trails that they had installed. And it's true that the city in the boilerplate portions of the agreement go into, yes, this is our park, we maintain control of it, you don't have the right to just go tear up our park, we get to control it, but what you're doing is mountain bike trails. And so what the City of Fort Worth did is they extended a limited control over a limited portion of the premises. But key, they did extend control of the premises for a limited portion to the association, and that was the association was then to come in and perform the traditional duties that the city would otherwise have with respect to the mountain bike trails. The trial court granted the association's traditional and no evidence motion for summary judgment without stating the basis, so this court should affirm the trial court's judgment if there is any basis for the summary judgment that's proper. And Delamar has the burden to prove that every basis was improper. The two main questions for this court are, what was the legal duty that was owed, and was there evidence before the trial court to meet that duty? There's four issues under that. First, that this is a premises case and not a general negligence case. Second, if it's premises, the recreational use statute applies, making the duty owed that to one of a trespasser. Third, it was premises and the recreational use statute didn't apply, it becomes a licensee standard. And fourth, Delamar would have at most been an invitee on the premises, but he did not meet that standard either. Appellant relies on the Adopt-a-Park agreement as establishing these legal duties owed to him, but that's incorrect. The agreement was between the association and the City of Fort Worth, and Delamar is not a party to that contract. The agreement does not establish the association's duty to Delamar. It would establish the association's duty to the City of Fort Worth as a matter of contract, which is not being complained of in this case. The association does not owe any duties under the contract to Delamar as to how it performs its contract with the city. The city owed Delamar with respect to the park. They owed him duties, and they have immunity, and therefore that's they got out of the case. The only way the association owes any duties is if a portion of that control, if the portion of the city's control is given over to the association, which is what happened via the Adopt-a-Park agreement. The city said, this is our traditional city function, we're extending a portion of this to you, and while the association does not get the benefit of the Tort Claims Act or immunity, it gets that control of that. In Texas, duty always follows control, and that limited control has a limited duty. Unfortunately, In this case, the accident occurred on the mountain bike trail, which was the portion of the premises that the association was controlling.
Are you saying that agreement gave the Mountain Bike Association the right to remove trees that they didn't cut down?
I believe it gave them the right to maintain the trail, which would include the right to trim trees, bushes. That was the primary
trim portion. Trees and bushes, I agree, but there's a specific provision in there that says that they cannot remove a tree without the city's permission. It doesn't say a tree that, it just says they can't remove a tree without the city's permission. Would that not include a fallen tree?
It could, Your Honor. I believe the practice might have been a little bit different on that. But I believe that if that duty was not given to the association, this was our whole argument, the association didn't owe any duties except what control was extended. And it was a very limited control. And anything outside that control was a city issue and not an association duty. And that's why, Chief Justice Sutterth, your question about the duty that's owed in that situation, I think, is exactly on point in that the situation, the association wouldn't traditionally owe any duties with respect to a city park. It's someone else's city park. It's the city's. It's not theirs. They only have that limited duty. And we challenged in the trial court, generally, what duty is owed. The case law is clear that a plaintiff has the burden to establish his status and establish what level of that three-tiered premises duty is owed to him. We challenged that in the trial court. We put them on notice and the trial court on notice. We're challenging your legal duty, which is a question of law, and they have the burden to come forth and establish. If you want to be an invitee, show us you're an invitee. If not, you're a licensee. The recreational use statute applies, you're a trespasser. That's what we were challenging in the trial court. That issue was squarely before the court, and it was being challenged. The Supreme Court, when looking at general negligence versus premises, has always applied a temporal relationship between the alleged negligent act or omission and the plaintiff's injury. If a plaintiff is injured by concurrent activity of a defendant, that is negligent activity. If you are mowing a lawn and something flies off your mower, the act of mowing and the injury of being hit by something flying, that is negligent activity. If the defendant does some negligent act or omission that creates an unsafe condition on the premises and causes someone to be injured later, that is negligent premises, and the three-tiered premises liability standards apply. Supreme Court consistently has applied that temporal relationship, notably in grocery store cases, something on the floor. How long was it there? Was it there long enough for the store to have reasonably known about it through a reasonable inspection? In all other contexts, not just grocery stores, that same temporal relationship. In this case, the negligent act or omission was failing to do something, failing to go do an inspection, failing to remove a tree that they may or may not have had an obligation or even a right to do. And then the injury happens later when Mr. Delamar is riding his bike. So that makes it a premises liability standard. Appellant cited the Austin versus Kroger case. I believe that's the one he was talking about without naming it. And it's cited in their brief about an employer's duty to warn employees. Well, that case, the Texas Supreme Court talked about the special relationship between employers and employees. And that's why they made a ruling in Austin versus Kroger about workers' comp waivers of defenses, because it's a whole different standard. And that was based on the special relationship between employers and employees, which is not at issue in this case today. At the trial court level at summary judgment, Judge Wallach was interested in this non-possessory interest holder issue, and I believe that it is applicable label. Texas duty follows control. And sometimes, as the owner of a property, you're a fee simple owner. You own it outright. Sometimes you own it with a long-term lease, a short-term rent. Sometimes you have permission to use it for the weekend. Sometimes you might be squatting on property that's not even yours, but you're controlling it illegally, but you're still controlling it. Sometimes you have an easement right. And it doesn't matter what level of control you have, the level of duty that you owe follows that control. If you own the property outright completely, you own duties with respect to the entire property. If you only have control over a limited portion, you only owe your duties with that limited portion. The Encore versus Murillo decision, which was cited to the trial court and to this court in our appellee's brief, is a square peg in a square hole. I believe it's an en banc decision from Houston out of 2014, and I believe that decision is completely applicable to the facts of this case. In that case, Maria was injured on property that Encore did not own or lease, but all it held was an electrical easement. And if you look at the duty that they had, it's very similar to the duty in this case. It was construction and maintenance and operation of an electrical easement. In this case, the association had installation and maintenance of mountain bike trails. So it's that same control over the premises. The Fort Worth Court of Appeals looked at that and said, you know what, we're not going to go from title ownership of the property. We're going to look at the control. And what they said is, if you have enough control over the property to create a dangerous condition, then you have enough control over that property to have a duty to remedy it. In this case, if the association had enough control over the city park that they had an obligation to maintain the trails, then they owe premises duties with respect to that. If they did not have enough control over the property to have any duty to come inspect or maintain the property, then they don't owe Mr. Delamar or any other member of the public any duties. The duty follows the control. The Court of Appeals in Houston said that because Encore's negligent acts were not contemporaneous with the negligence, but it was beforehand in creating the unsafe condition, that general negligence standards did not apply, but it was premises duties based on Encore's failure to take measures with the property to make it safe. So I believe in this case, the technical title of the association would have been a non-possessory interest holder with respect to the mountain back trails. It had limited control of the premises, and it owed the traditional three-tiered premises duties with respect to anyone injured by an unsafe condition on those trails. The recreational use statute, I believe, does apply in this case. And appellant is correct. We're not arguing that the association was an owner or a lessee of the property. The issue is whether they were an occupant of the property. First off, I would state that the whole purpose of the recreational use statute from the legislature was to reduce the duties owed. If you allow property to be used for recreational uses, it reduces the duty that you owe with respect to those uses. It would make no sense to have a statute that lowers the premises liability standard that you owe if it doesn't apply to the same people who actually control the property and owe those duties. To the extent that the association controlled the mountain bike trails, they occupied the mountain bike trails. Your Honor, I have a hard time seeing how someone could come in and use whatever equipment they used, a bobcat or, you know, chainsaws, and to come in and make these mountain bike trails without at least temporarily occupying the premises. I don't see how you can come in and trim these trails back without occupying and controlling the premises. Not the entire premises, the mountain bike trails. I'm sure when you're running a chainsaw on it, you have to block off the trail. You're controlling and occupying it. If you're out there on a Saturday work day and you're cleaning up the trails, you're controlling it. You're occupying it. You're setting a cone up at the beginning to say, hey, look, we're on these trails. Stay off. We're operating machinery on it. We're clearing them up. So they had occupancy and control for the limited rights that were passed to the association in the Adopt-a-Park Agreement. If the court agrees that premises standards apply, which Appley believes that is the right decision, then the association wins under any of the three applicable standards. There is no evidence in the record of gross negligence, which is what would be owed to a trespasser under the recreational use statute. There is no evidence that the risk of a tree falling is such a high probability of risk that it would create a duty on a small volunteer association to come in and inspect a multiple square miles big city park, that the duties that would create under a gross negligence standard. If the court finds that this was a licensee standard, that there was no evidence of actual knowledge, and I'll address very briefly the waiver issue. I don't believe that this was waived. I believe that the very first page of the motion for summary judgment put the court and Delamar on notice that we were challenging duty owed. They had an obligation to meet their standard, but even if the court were to find it waived, the other basis for summary judgment are proper. And if Mr. Delamar was a licensee on the property, meaning he was there for the mutual benefit of himself and the association, that there's no evidence of actual or constructive knowledge, meaning how long that tree had been there long enough to give the association time to discover it and correct it through reasonable inspection. Mr. Delamar had ridden that trail a couple of days earlier. The association had been out there 2 weeks earlier, so we know this was a short time period. They have no evidence when that tree fell or anything along those lines, so they can't meet the standard of an invitee. Very briefly on the hearsay objection, appellant's issue number two, the entire report was an out-of-court statement. It was not, the opinions were not sworn. All that the expert swore was, this is a true and correct copy of my hearsay report. He didn't incorporate his substantive opinions, but even if that was somehow not hearsay, it was harmless error. That would not meet their standards, and there would be no point in reversing over that. For these reasons, appellee, the Fort Worth Mountain Bikers Association, respectfully ask this court to affirm the judgment of the trial court. I would be glad to answer any additional questions that you may have. Thank you.
Thank you. Justice Sutter, in the motion for summary judgment, they specifically set forth in their own summary judgment portion of no evidence whether there was actual or constructive notice. That is specifically not licensee. Opposing counsel specifically stated it would have to be actual notice. So their own motion for summary judgment said actual or constructive. That's why, and then they didn't raise it because we pointed it out in our response. That's when they specifically changed positions. They actually not only did not raise it, they specifically changed positions in their reply brief. With regard to occupier, I think it is a far stretch to come under the recreational use and say that the Mountain Bikers Association, as an independent contractor, is an occupier of this premises. Opposing counsel's statement to this court was anybody who uses the property is an occupier of the property. If that is the standard, then everybody who's ever on that premises is an occupier of that standard. That can't be. The legislature, when they look at the recreational use statute, was specific: owner, lessee, or occupier. They certainly were not occupying in any sense of the word of occupying, about being on it somehow permanently, residing on it, living there, conducting business there. They came there, as he said, sporadically to maintain the premises. The testimony of the president said they would go out there and maintain and inspect the property. If it's ordinary negligence, they did not move for summary judgment on that. If the appropriate standard is invitee, we did submit evidence, albeit both by our client as well as the president, that they had gone out there and inspected it. They had actually even contemplating closing the park because there were so many trees falling down because of
the
drought.
That was in October, and this incident occurred in July.
I believe it was in May, was it not?
I
would have to check on that.
Went and looked back at that, and I thought he said it was in October that they considered closing the park, which was several months after this occurred.
Yes, but if that's when they said that in October, they knew they were out there inspecting. They knew they had noticed throughout that summer because the drought was so severe. His testimony was, as I recall, that they had known there were so many trees falling down. By October, that's when they were contemplating closing it down. So the acts that were giving rice were right in the middle of July, and I think we know here in July in Texas what's happening in the summertime. In any event, then on top of it, we do have the expert report, which was struck by the trial court, that testified that they should have a reasonable inspection of those trees would have indicated that that tree was specifically was in danger under the most base level of inspection. So it's two parts. One is the inspection process, and two, failing to keep it maintained appropriately to their contractual obligations. The premises liability, as I've stated before, the licensee status was not raised, in fact changed, so what I thought was before the court would be the invitee status until they changed positions. Either way, we still think, first and foremost, this is an ordinary negligence under a contractual shifting of obligations. Secondly, if not, then it's a premises invitee standard. In either event, we believe the court should reverse and send us back to the trial court.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Gentlemen, we appreciate your arguments. They've been helpful to us, and your case is now submitted. You're free to go about your business. Thank you.